Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. According to what I've just been told, here's the podcast for the Early Morning Late Show. Enjoy our conversations. Good morning. It's 4 minutes after the hour. Thanks for starting your day with me this morning. I almost broke into song there, but I didn't. That would have been really depressing for all the listeners. Because I really can't sing. I'd like to be able to sing, but I can't. I could sing when I was younger. For some reason, I had a soprano voice. And then my voice changed and I couldn't sing anymore. So it's probably still in there. I just need to figure out how to do it. But you should hear me at church. I'm not good. Anyway, I'm thinking of Luke chapter 22, in starting in verse 54. Then seizing him, they led him away and took him into the house of the high priest. Peter followed at a distance. And when some there had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and had sat down together, Peter sat down with them. A servant girl saw him seated there in the firelight. She looked closely at him and said, "This man is with him." But he denied it. "Woman, I don't know him," he said. And a little later, someone else saw him and said, "You also are one of them." "Man, I am not," Peter replied. About an hour later, another asserted, "Certainly this fellow was with him, for he is a Galilean." Peter replied, "Man, I don't know what you're talking about." Just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed. The Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Ouch. We've got a week like no other week coming up as we start Holy Week and Good Friday. This coming Friday, Easter Sunday, just 6 days away. Let's focus our hearts and minds and know that as we go out into the workplace today, we're going to be confronted with people making accusations. Are we going to stand up for our faith and stand up for Jesus? Let's pray as we start our week. Heavenly Father, give us the strength this day to do all that you have entrusted us to do. Help us to glorify your name in everything we do. In Jesus' name. Let's get the week started right with Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines, the great state of Iowa. In a generic poll, he is leading 46 to 41. Find out just in a minute what he's leading with. Be back in a minute.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
Do? Why, if I had a brain, I could...
I could while away the hours, conferring with the flowers, consulting with the rain. And my head, I'd be scratching while my thoughts were busy hatching if I only had a brain.
Good morning, we are back. That theme song belongs to Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from prestigious West Des Moines.
Were you whistling? You
I was can whistling. Whistle? Yeah,
I cannot whistle.
I can't on cue. You just asked me to do it, and I can't do it. So yeah,
I walk around like I got a mouthful of saltines. I just can't. I can't whistle.
So in 1827, Ludwig von Beethoven died on this day at age 56. How are you feeling this morning?
Oh, I'm 57. You know, okay, I'm 57. it doesn't take much to put me into a sour mood anyway.
I know.
My city, I get this notice that they're going to crack down on parking violations. So
what is that all about?
I don't know. But, you know, I mean, at least on a positive note, they are offering a rewards club. So, you know, it's like and of course, a book of coupons. You can prepay your tickets, I think. It's everybody's got the rewards club now.
Everybody's
got a rewards club. My cardiologist offers a punch card.
Yeah.
KGs, he just punches it. Number 11's free. And I asked him, I go, I mean, how many people cash in the 11? He goes, nobody's ever made it that far. So that's my mood today.
Yeah, but things are looking bright. It's a new week. It's Holy Week. And we've got Easter coming up on Sunday. So I'm excited about that, as you are, I'm sure.
On Sunday. Yeah. You used your Bible verse. Peter got the bad news.
He did.
Jesus says, you're going to. What? You're just going to say you don't really even know me. And you think that, you know, Peter was probably doing his best Dana Carvey impression of George Bush. Not going to do it.
Not another man. Not gonna know. Not gonna.
I'm
do
not
it.
Gonna do it. Yeah. I'm not gonna do it. You're wrong about that one, Jesus. Yeah. It's like, sure, it happened.
Now you've got a popular tweet on Twitter right now, don't you?
Yeah, you know, it's I guess everything's Stormy Daniels now.
Mm-hmm. We're not gonna talk about that.
The left used to say, "Stay out of our bedrooms." And what they meant was stay out of our bedrooms. Yours, on the other hand, we're very interested in. And so she's just spilling her guts. Everything Donald Trump, everything Donald Trump. And I figure, why not just get it all done? She could write a book and she could just, you know, say it's her tell-all book about Donald Trump called The Art of the Squeal. Just squeal like, you know, is that what a stool pigeon does?
I don't know what a stool pigeon does.
I don't even know what a regular pigeon does.
I don't either. So,
yeah.
What do you think about construction of the wall, and what do you think Donald Trump is doing to get this accomplished? Because this wall must be built in order to save reputation and everything else. I don't think Mexico is going to pay for it. Who might be paying for it this time?
You know, I'm wondering, you know, of course, you always have the people that will defend anything that Trump does. And they'll say, oh, he's playing, you know, six-dimensional underwater chess.
Mm-hmm.
Invisible pawns, you know, that kind of thing. And so I'm open to the idea that there is maybe something more clever going on here, because the signing of that omnibus bill, which should really be called the omnibusted. That's a lot of money where I come from.
Oh, yeah. Me too.
I'm from eight kids. We had to share everything. So $1.3 trillion would have helped. They say, oh, my gosh, he surrendered everything. And I go, yeah, that's not really his history. So maybe there is some merit to the idea that with all of the money going to the military, he could essentially put the Army Corps of Engineers on to building this wall, because he's starting to call it a national emergency. So just maybe, maybe, you know, there's something more clever going on. And Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer – in a couple of days, I'll be scratching my head saying, how did we not see that one?
Right.
I admit I would enjoy that. But, you know, I see they're now starting to argue over the terminology of it, because there are parts of it where it's not a wall, but it's fencing, and he promised a wall. I say, look, can people get through it? If the answer is no, doesn't really matter what you call it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's the general idea. It's a stopper.
Mm-hmm. Patrick, there's been a lot of ongoing gun protests. Largely with teenagers doing a lot of the yelling and screaming. Have you followed any of this?
How can you not follow it? Mm-hmm. They're plastering these kids all over the place. That one kid, David Hogg, is it Hogg?
Hogg,
yeah. I don't know if I want to like the kid or if I want to continue to not like the kid. But he's obviously being propped up a bit. The left is notorious for using people that are unassailable. It's like, how dare you attack a teenager who, you know, survived this horrific thing? How dare you attack Cindy Sheehan, Sandra Fluke? I don't know if you remember Sandra Fluke. Mm-hmm. She was her child because she couldn't afford $10 a month for birth control, and that the healthcare plan, people should have to pay for her birth control so she can live the life she wants to live. And if you attacked her, it's like, how dare you? So I think people are getting a little bit tired of the shields that they put up. And maybe that's why they're reaching so much, saying you cannot say anything negative about these kids, or you're a hater, or et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to work, because I think inherently, do we even really listen to teenagers? What do you get their advice on? You say, look, can you just show me how to work this app? That's about it. You
know? Well, let's just talk about their place in life. I mean, they most of them are living with their parents.
Yeah.
And so they're okay with socialism, right?
Well, you know, a home – I grew up under socialism. It was a house with eight kids. Mm-hmm. Socialism is not the only thing that works, because the kids aren't about to get a job. So dad went out and worked. He provided everything, and you said, well, of course, all my needs are met, and all I have to do is follow a couple of simple rules, and then there's a roof over my head, there's food in the fridge, and everything's taken care of. And, you know, of course, that works in a home. But, you know, as kids get older, it's amazing, because they say, well, I'm about to walk away from this. I would like to walk away from this comfort that I'm in and try to make it on my own. And you're thinking, well, why? If socialism is good, just stay at home and have your mom and dad provide for you, whatever. And of course, that's not going to happen. And they so they're, get, they're to, yeah.
They want to get out from underneath the oppressiveness of mom and dad.
Yes, that oppressiveness of those home cooked meals. Delicious. Come on, nobody makes meatloaf like mom.
Nobody. Yeah.
My mom made Swiss steak. I still don't know what that is.
I don't either.
I went to Switzerland. They don't have anything like that there.
Love Swiss steak.
Swiss, yeah. It's I believe it's the worst cut of meat you can find, smothered in some sort of cream of mushroom gravy, toss in a couple of onions to disguise the lack of flavor.
Right.
And chewy toughiness, and of course, it makes a great rawhide toy for the dog later. But yeah, you know, you leave the comfort of home, and next thing you know, you're eating ramen, living in a 300 square foot apartment with six roommates. If you happen to say, you want to go to New York and make it as an actor, I know people that have lived with, you know, half a dozen. There's been a half a dozen crammed in a 300 or 400 square foot little apartment. It's like you gave up the comfort of home for this. Why? Freedom. Well, that's what we all want. Freedom.
We all want that. All right, Pat, let me take a break. When we come back, more with Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from Des Moines. Be back in a minute. We are back. It's 18 minutes after the hour. Thanks for joining me this morning. I have on my studio, I'm in Patrick Albanese, my friend and colleague from Des Moines. Patrick, so the gun control issue, this is never going to go away. And it's, you know, obviously with all the student protests, it's it seems to be only accelerating. Wasn't there a sheriff running on a kind of an unusual foundation? What did he say again?
Well, I think if you were to take his exact quote, how did it go? His name's Daryl Frischer. He's running for sheriff.
He's a Democratic candidate. He says any weapon that is designed for use by the military, I think we should ban.
Yep. You've heard people say, you have to pry it from my cold dead hands. He shrugs his shoulders and says, okay. You know, that's... Wow, you want to be the sheriff, and you're saying, by the way, I am perfectly willing to shoot you dead to remove your gun from your hand. So gun control for gun control, I don't know where all of this is going. And, of course, I'm sure he'll say, oh, gosh, it was just a joke. Isn't it interesting that we live in a time now where jokes are taken seriously?
Mm-hmm.
When someone says something seriously, he says, that's a joke. You know, comedians can't tell a joke because people say, hey, 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 and they take what they said as this is as serious truth and vice versa. We're in that upside down world. I guess we shouldn't be surprised.
Mm-hmm.
We should not be surprised.
But what's your feeling about John Bolton? You like him? Seems like a smart guy.
He seems like a smart guy. You know, he certainly can be divisive. You know, you see people going, yay. You see other ones going, uh-oh.
Right.
Doesn't this guy just start wars, you know, if he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed? You know, there are things that he definitely has right. He certainly seems to have the right take on the threats that are posed to our country with, say, radical Islam. He doesn't sugarcoat it. And, you know, the previous administration obviously did. They removed references in training manuals to radical Islam as if it didn't exist, just, you know, kind of whitewashed it. So it's great that he understands the real threat. I don't think he's going to, you know, bum rush us into any kind of war, but I am hoping for maybe more of an approach like Nikki Haley, who I just think the world of, who shows up at the United Nations, takes a stand. Boy, I want her to be president for life.
She's impressive, isn't she?
She's amazing.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about Uncle Joe Biden saying that he would like to take Donald Trump out back in high school and beat him up?
Yeah, I don't, you know, if they do it pay-per-view, yes.
I've seen
Trump in the ring before, though. He's, you know, he's pretty tough. I know it was WWF. But,
right.
Well, you know, is he trying to be Donald Trump?
I don't know. I don't know. But when grown men like this, and what is Biden? Is he 75 and Trump 71 and they're having these kind of conversations like I'll take him out back and beat him up? Like, is this how you solve differences with violence?
I don't know, but you know, it's, you know, when you're like a parent, and you know your kid is misbehaving on the other side of the room, and you're saying, you know, don't make me come over there.
Right.
You know, these guys are gonna be like, don't make me scoot over there. don't make me shuffle over there. I got a bum knee. if we could just fight from these chairs, that'd be fantastic. Maybe that's one of the things you get with Trump. Everybody thinks that's the direction the political discourse has to go. But, you know, Obama, as well spoken as he was not nice.
Mm-hmm.
He was a guy that says, get in their faces. He was a guy that said, you know, don't bring a knife to a gunfight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he said some pretty crass things, but said in such an eloquent way. People said, well, that was awful nice. Like, no, it's, you know, just asking people politely to shoot your neighbor is not really, you know, friendly. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, I think Trump's just a little bit more crude, and maybe Uncle Joe thinks this is the way to go. But
yeah.
I guess he's running.
Yeah. So what are the topics of conversation in your small church? Your small group.
Oh, my small group.
Yeah, your small group of church.
Oh gosh, you know, we tend to cover a lot of things. We try to cover sermons that were covered, and so mm-hmm. of course, with Easter week, spectacular sermon, by the way, yesterday. We should almost do a thing called Sir Monday Morning Quarterbacking, just to dissect some of the sermons, because you and I both love dissecting sermons.
We do indeed.
But, yeah, you know, it was fun. We were talking about, and I don't know why this missed me. But, you know, everybody's familiar with the story of Jesus flipping over the tables at the temple. And I guess for some reason I keep forgetting that that happened after that pretty tremendous ride into town on the back of a donkey. You know, it wasn't an incident that happened a whole nother time in his ministry. This is at the height of everything going really great and the hosannas and the whole thing. First thing he does when he gets to the church is says, I'm not happy with this. It really caught a lot of us by surprise. We're going, how did we mess up that timeline? It's obviously if he had some handlers, if he had some PR people, they'd say, no, this is the wrong thing to do at this point in time. You're doing great. You don't come in here and disrupt this thing. But, you know, he throws out the money changers. He throws out the guy charging $16, you know, for the mutton on a stick. Because the guy's got the market cornered, going, well, nobody else is allowed to sell mutton here.
Right.
That's not right. You're gouging these people.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of the topics we covered recently. It was a lot of fun.
Well, good. And then big plans for Easter. This services at your church. I know you've got kind of a mega church in Des Moines. How many services are planned?
52.
Okay.
So.
Why did I know I wouldn't get a straight answer?
It's got to be a lot.
Yeah.
In the Christmas services, they moved to, an 18,000 seat arena this year, and they still had to do four of them.
And why wouldn't they do that at Easter? It sounds like a great opportunity to do that once again.
I think so, but they do. Well, we happen to love the 6 a.m., the sunrise service.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic. You know, first off, preacher's fresh. You know, you go to that.
Hasn't cranked it out nine times yet.
Yeah, he's like, you guys, just read the notes. Just read the notes. I got to go. His voice is fresh. He's on fire, and the sun's coming up. It's for some reason, we just keep scoring these beautiful days. And so that's our plan, is the sunrise service. The kids even enjoy it, because as we're walking out and we see everybody else lined up for the 8 o'clock service and the parking lot's mayhem, it's like, we're going home.
Yeah.
That eggs to find.
They see the advantage of getting somewhere early. Which is kind of a good thing to learn in life. All right, Patrick, thanks so much for being on the show.
Yeah, you know, I just realized, by the way, just as a closing thought, I never really get to listen to the show, so I downloaded the app, but I call every week, so I realize that I am a first-time listener, long-time caller.
We love it. We love it. And we'll talk again soon. Thanks so much. Have a great day.
You too.
Yep. It's 26 minutes after the hour. Good morning. It is Monday, March 26th, and we're looking at Easter Sunday coming up. We're praising God for all he has done. We'll take a short break and be back.
It's like, baby, it's something that we love to see.
Good morning. It's half past the hour. Are you a whistler? Do you like to whistle? Is that relaxing to you? Guess who's whistling right now? Paul McCartney. Ha. All right, we'll take a little break for news. When we come back, Dr. Adam Carrington's going to be with us. Put a little whistle in your cheeks today. That'll make your day a little bit brighter. Be back in a minute. It is 26 minutes until the top of the hour. Steve Farrar is an author, and he's the founder of Men's Leadership Ministries. And he says, when we're suffering, it can be hard to see and trust that God is at work. He says God is always working on our behalf, even when we can't see it.
Oftentimes, we look on our radar and we're in trouble, and we don't see the Lord. We see no possible means. We see no possible means that God could rescue us and save us. But his providence, so many times, is stealth. It doesn't come on your radar. If you just wait, if you just hold on to his faithfulness instead of taking things into your hand, you will see him. Psalm 50, call on me in the day of trouble. I will rescue you, and you will honor me. In those moments, we have to listen to truth rather than the deception. So anyone in that situation today, that's what I would say. Don't take this into your hands. God knows where you are. He can rescue. He will rescue if you'll call on him.
That is Steve Farrar. If you want to hear that interview from start to finish, it's available at myfaithradio.com. You can go check it out. F-A-R-R-A-R is how you spell his last name. After a very short break, we will be joined by Dr. Adam Carrington from Hillsdale College. Back in a minute.
Persecution in this country? It's already here. This is Jim Garlow. We look at other parts of the world, we pray for the persecuted church, and well, we should. All it takes for us to experience full-fledged persecution is to not be protected by good laws, by not having righteous people interpreting and enforcing those good laws. It's naive to assume, even though we have good laws, that that's all we need. No, if we have wicked individuals interpreting or enforcing them, that's a problem. Just ask churches who stood for traditional marriage. Ask business owners who provided services based on biblical values. Ask individuals who've prayed in schools or at public events. Ask them what happened. Lawsuits? Fines? Reputation smeared? Buildings defaced? Sound familiar? Persecution is not simply coming to America at some point. It's here. This is our moment to stand. There's more at jimgarlow.com.
Twenty-three minutes until the top of the hour. Dr. Adam Carrington, my guest and regular friend on the show, is with us on our studio line this morning, professor from Hillsdale College. Good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Bill. How are you?
I'm well. I spent the weekend doing tax preparation. Have you done that yet?
I have, and thankfully, I'm never more. It's almost like a workout. The best part of it is when it's over.
You're so true. So when they tell you the sky is falling, and it probably isn't, but when they tell you not to worry, you probably should, huh?
That might be a decent way of putting it. And I actually spent my weekend painting a bathroom, so I didn't get a return out of that. So I guess I'll take the tax preparation a little bit over that.
Right. Do you feel, Adam, like all the news we're getting nowadays is the sky is falling and everything is coming to an abrupt end and you better look out, it's never been worse?
I think that seems to be the case. And one question is to ask, why is that so prevalent? It's not like we haven't had, you know, I think most people have a little tiny Chicken Little in themselves. But what's making that Chicken Little a lot bigger to scream that the sky is falling? And I wonder if, you know, not to pile on given all the things happening with Facebook and all that, but if, you know, social media plus 24-hour cable news might not contribute to that part that, of what's natural with us. And the reason I say that is you know, how do people get your attention when now thousands and thousands of outlets are trying to maintain it? They're trying to find news content. They're trying to find a way to get you to click. And it seems to feed into our emotions and what's, you know, one of our most base emotions, survival.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wonder if there isn't, not that all of this doesn't have some natural component to human, how human beings are, but if the way we're living might make it so we're having trouble distinguishing between real crises and just difficulties or tensions that are going to happen in life.
Well, we create a lot of alarms, don't we? Many of them are false.
Yep. And you know, and like I said, it can go from Chicken Little to The Boy Who Cried Wolf.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quickly.
Where on one hand we may become numb to the capacity to discern what are real crises that need dealt with, as opposed to ginned up ones that are merely trying to get our attention.
Mm-hmm. Did you follow any of the March for Our Lives?
I did a little bit.
Okay.
And I will say that is one situation where now, on one hand, you have to understand that that's going to be a very emotional event.
Mm-hmm.
Basis for it. You can't downplay the idea that people are going to be feel deeply and react viscerally to their own classmates or their own family members or even just children, if you're not connected to them, dying in such a horrific way. At the same time, I wonder if it doesn't contribute the way it was done into some of the things you were saying, not so much the sky is falling, but this sort of raw emotional outburst that needs to be connected with reason. It needs to be connected with ideas, because I think when I was looking, you know, one sign I saw that was going around showed Marco Rubio with a blood cross pasted on his forehead, and was attacking his religiosity, saying that he's supposedly a Catholic or supposedly a Christian, but that, you know, basically the blood of the students from the shooting was on his hands. And I think that kind of discourse just isn't helpful. I think it really, you know, I think we need to let people grieve, even in public, but that seems to me to be a troubling sign that is what our discourse looks like on something that really needs discussed, which is what should be done about gun regulations to make sure things like this don't happen again or happens very infrequently at worst.
Is this this rally, is it going to make a difference in the gun debate? Is it going to be helpful to our discussions?
I think it might make a difference, and I don't know if it's going to be positive. So what I mean by a difference is we're going to see one of the problems with gun control is that you can often get a poll that says a majority of people support gun regulations, but then it almost rarely translates into election results. And I think the reason for that is people who support the Second Amendment, the National Rifle Association and others, may not always be a majority at times, but they're the most fervent. I think a lot of people that support gun control tend to not – there's a sizable part of that group that's not huge. It's not what drives them to the polls. And so we'll see if this is a change. But what I would like to see is a more fruitful discussion where – the emotion is channeled toward asking what really could have stopped this from happening, what really could balance the Second Amendment rights of individual gun owners with reasonable gun regulations to protect people's lives against gun violence. And I didn't really see that going on. So I think it could up the passion on the issue. I don't know if it'll up the reasonableness and discourse on it.
Did the students organize this, or is there a bigger machine behind them?
I think that they have certainly been very active politically since then, which of course is their right as part of this political community. I mean, I don't mean this cynically, but I can't imagine myself at that age being able to organize something like this without lots of extra help. And that doesn't mean that I think there's some shady, nefarious thing going on in the background, but I think it's hard to not imagine that what they have chosen to do, these students, is plug into structures and organizations that already existed in order to try to get their message out. So, mm-hmm. I don't believe that this was just them in a room by themselves doing this. I think that's hard to imagine. I was a high schooler once, and you know, these may be a lot more responsible and thoughtful high schoolers than me, but even a more responsible version of me couldn't have done this without help.
All right, H.R. McMaster out, John Bolton in. Seems to be mixed reviews about that. I've always kind of liked John Bolton, great mustache, but he seems to want to go to war with everybody. True or false?
Well, the mustache is pretty spectacular.
It's tremendous.
We actually have a faculty member here who, with his mustache, looks like John Bolton. It's actually a little eerie once he got hired to see him walking down the halls. I kept wondering who had showed up. But what's interesting with him is going to be how much is he. There's sort of two sides to Donald Trump as president when he was running, an anti-Bush side and an anti-Obama side. The anti-Bush side was we shouldn't go to war except for in our close national interest. We should be very careful about those things. But the anti-Obama side was stop being soft with other countries. Bolton is much more the anti-Obama side of that. Don't be soft with other countries. He was a darling during the Bush administration when there was the idea that we're going to push more preemptive strikes and conflicts with other countries. So one of the questions is, to what degree will Bolton modify his more hawkish line to fit the one side of President Trump's position, and to what part could the anti-Obama side, don't be soft on other countries, overwhelm that?
Do you overall like the choice?
I think that he is certainly a someone who knows his things, mm-hmm. You know, knows his foreign policy. I'm a bit wait and see on it because I don't think McMaster was doing a terrible job. I think he didn't gel well with President Trump personally. That's what things are coming out as the at least as the scuttlebutt behind the scenes. But I think it really depends. Is Bolton going to be the same thing he was 12, 14 years ago? If so, then President Trump's going to tire of him very quickly. If not, then, you know, maybe he could be a fresh face that improves relations among the different departments doing foreign policy. So I think it's hard to tell. I have trouble determining whether I like it or not because I'm not sure which Bolton is going to show up based on what he said in the past versus what he's saying now.
Adam, I have to go to break, but was there any one issue that caused McMaster to lose favor with President Trump?
I honestly think it was a personal interaction from what I've seen. I think that McMaster was someone who just personality-wise didn't work well with the president, they weren't able to create a rapport, and because of that, it was just a bad working relationship, I think even more than policy differences, even though I think those existed as well. But I think ultimately it was a bad work relationship.
All right, let me take a break. When we come back, more with Dr. Adam Carrington. 13 minutes until the top of the hour. Be right back. Ten minutes until the top of the hour. I have on our studio line Dr. Adam Carrington, professor from Hillsdale College. All right, Adam, I need you to sort something out for me. President Trump, he threatened to veto this spending bill and then a few hours later signed it. What was that about?
Well, and before that, he tweeted that it was a good bill.
yeah.
And I think on one hand, I think some of that is reaction to really negative press coverage from sectors that are usually very positive toward him. I think the other is just the ambivalent nature of this bill. This thing is what's called an omnibus spending bill, which, you know, an ominous omnibus might be a good way to call it. And what the problem with those kind of bills is they're basically throw everything about spending into one piece of legislation rather than breaking the budget apart according to the logical subdivisions of the government. And I think one of the problems is when you have such a morass of legislation that has so much in it, there's going to be things you like, things you don't like, and it's going to be hard to isolate what's good and bad. And I think that's part of the frustration with a kind of bill like this. And the problem with a kind of bill like this is there's going to be parts you wish you could veto, parts you wish you could sign. And I think the president was also running into that problem with this piece of legislation.
Adam, if he was given $1.6 billion to build the wall and then given $700 billion for the military, is President Trump trying to do a workaround saying, all right, now I've got this military money, and oh boy, I have a national emergency at the southern border, so I better use some of that money to build the wall? Did he do an end around?
That could happen. I mean, I got to admit, I would have to look at the language, but of course, the president has, and he's not the first, have claimed extremely wide discretionary power to allocate and move money, and Congress has not at all and done a good job of pinning the executive down. And that really shows, I think, a problem with our modern government, there's such a confusion of the separation of powers that the executive power is supposed to enforce the law. And, of course, that there's some discretion in doing so. But when you can wholesale move money from one project to another, and Congress doesn't step in and say, wait, that's not what we were saying, I think that's a problem. And that has nothing to do with whether the border wall is a good idea or not. It's about the idea that the process of how it's done matters, because you may like an outcome here and may not like when a president acts unilaterally on the next. It's not just what gets done, it's how it gets done. And I think that's a bigger, wider problem that goes beyond the border law and or a border issue and precedes even this administration.
Mm-hmm. Adam, what do you think the Republicans are thinking right now with the midterms coming up and the progress that they have with this omnibus spending bill? I don't know what goes on in Mitch McConnell's head or Paul Ryan's head. Do you have any insight to that?
If so, I might be rich on the stock market, actually. It's sort of like in Back to the Future, where the character goes back and tells himself who to pick in the Super
right,
Bowl.
Right.
Here's what I think. I saw someone else say this, and I think it might be the case. The omnibus spending bill shows that in many ways, Republicans recognize that they're not very popular right now. And I think some of that with President Trump is personality, but some of that with the Republican Party in Congress is a lot of their agenda isn't deeply popular beyond the tax cuts. And I think the omnibus spending bill is sort of a party that knows some of what it's been pushing hasn't been popular, but doesn't quite know what the alternative is. And I think given the really, to be honest, disastrous election result in Pennsylvania earlier this month, with a 20-point Trump district going marginally for a Democrat, and we've seen enough of this. This has happened enough times that isn't a fluke. I think Republicans realize that unless something turns around, and it could, there's still months for the election to change. They're in serious trouble in the fall. I think the Senate is still a long shot for Democrats because there are very few Senate seats up that are Republican. At the same time, I think the House is in serious trouble, and I don't know that, you know, the only thing keeping Republicans from complete collapse is that the economy is doing decent. And so that if that were to go south, then things would really be a problem. As it stands, I think they're still in serious trouble because they don't know how to pitch themselves to the American people in a coherent fashion.
If Democrats took control, though, there wouldn't get much done. It would be not with a Republican president.
Right. And one of the questions is, you know, in some ways, the American people, on one hand, they're going to need to make up their minds about a certain direction they want the country to go. But I can't completely blame them, because I think there is, you know, between the Bernie Sanders and the Hillary Clinton wings of the Democratic Party and the Trump and the opposition to Trump wings of the Republican Party, it's hard to tell what the coherent message is for either side. And I think that the problem is we're in a time where we're going to have to sort out a lot of what the American people want, but part of that is going to be sorting out a lot of what the parties stand for. And that means some herky-jerky back and forth as to what actually gets done and what doesn't. And I don't think it's going to be pretty. I don't think it's going to be good in the short term, but hopefully long term we get some clarity. And we're going to have to just do that by having elections and having the people voice their opinion.
Yeah. Adam, before we get too upset about the stifling debt and this new spending bill, we have to understand that Congress is making sacrifices as well. They apparently can't spend more than $1,000 a month on their vehicle leases. So, you know, we're all suffering together.
You know what? Everybody has to do their part, and everybody has to suffer a little bit. You know what? If they wanted to just offer me that little, I would take it.
I get it. Thanks, Adam. Have a great day, and happy Easter.
You too.
You bet. 57 minutes after the hour. Be back in a minute. Thanks to Dr. Adam Carrington, Patrick Albanese for making Hour One so good. Next up, we've got a great second hour with an Australian and a Brit. That's going to be a great hour. Thanks for listening to the Early Morning Late Show podcast. These conversations are available because of your prayerful and financial support. Make a gift now at myfaithradio.com. To avoid missing future editions of the Early Morning Late Show, subscribe to the podcast today at iTunes or your podcast player. And thanks for sharing this audio link with a friend, and grow the impact of the Early Morning Late Show.